This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 146. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Welcome back to the show, Berners. Did you have a nice holiday?
Yes, I did, thanks. Nearly broke my neck in the Italian Alps, which was good fun. I hit a little ice glacier and couldn't stop.
Good work, lad.
Any highly dangerous activities for you this week, Garris?
No. I've not fallen off any ice glasses this week, so that's good news. But I've been working a lot in squash courts and doing a lot of catching technique with my players at Millfield, and they've been going pretty well. So I like working on squash courts. So you can get a lot done on those, and it's been a good week.
Yes, well, the good thing about Millfield is there's very few glaciers.
Yeah, we haven't got too many. The Glastonbury Tour is not covered with ice too often, mate.
So we're going to talk a little bit about cricket, as we always do on the show. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about was David Warner, who's sort of exploded into Test cricket by smashing a big 100 against India. And he's done it in a very untraditional way. He's sort of cut his teeth on 2020 cricket and hasn't played a lot of first-class cricket. And now he's playing Test cricket and looks very much like he's on target to become a top player. So, Gareth, what's your view of how David Warner has done it? Is 2020 the way to get into Test cricket nowadays?
Well, I mean, it's proven that it is in his case. But the conventional ways are there to pick up most of the players. But the great thing about David Warner is the fact that even in that 100, where he was obviously very, very attacking, the shots were good shots. And I think that's one of the reasons why David Warner's actually been successful at 2020 when he's travelled to IPL and Champions League and internationally as well, is the fact that his technique's pretty good. And he just hits straight through cricket balls. You know, he's not one that does too many dual scoops or flips. He just plays solid cricket shots, but hits them from probably a bigger extent of length than most players around the world. And that innings at Perth, you know, to me was a joy to watch, because he just played proper cricket shots, but he just took advantage of anything that was loose, and then after a while was hitting anything off the length as well, which is what he does in 2020 cricket. So it's a way in, but I do think that because of the amount of 2020 cricket that's being played, you know, a lot of the fielding techniques that have been worked on in 2020 specifically coming into the game, a lot of the bowling variations on some of these flat wickets that we see out in India, you know, you need to be able to get wickets, you need to be able to see the batter, and 2020 techniques come into play in that as well. So there's a definite correlation between the two. How many players will go straight from IPL to Test cricket, I don't know. And would David Warner have done it if he hadn't have had a little bit of success in first-class cricket the last year or so? You know, his work up at Durham and in Australia has probably given him that opportunity to do it, as well as just the 2020. But he's a good player. He hits straight through cricket balls, and you can do that in any format.
How do you see it, Berners? Is Warner a one-off, or is it something that we're going to see more of?
Well, I think essentially it's a classic case of the guy having one style and one technique, and he's applying it to all forms of the game, isn't he? Which is really great to see. You know, you see some of the players, they do change the way they play. You've got a couple of guys who play in the 2020 hussy, people like that. They literally play a slightly different kind of, they execute different shots, they have a different plan, whereas Warner just goes out there, and I think Gareth's made a good point. He plays very solid, proper cricket shots. He plays in the V. He hits it over the top of cover and extra cover, which are key scoring zones in 2020. And he literally took the Indians by surprise, if you could say that, and they weren't quite expecting that. But that was David Warner. That's the way he plays, with a high strike rate, looks to take things on over the top and just play solid cricket shots. And he's now doing that in every format of the game, and yeah, he's revolutionised the dynamics of an opening test batsman, I guess, when you look back through the dark ages, how they traditionally leave the ball and are very patient and their strike rate's almost minus at times. He's abolished all of that. So, yeah, joy to behold, and I think a new generation and future for test cricket as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's not the first, is he? You look at Sehwag, who does it in a different way in all formats of a game. He had a more conventional journey through to international cricket, I suppose, having played a lot of first-class cricket before he got in. But, you know, it's a similar approach, isn't it? And as you say, the great thing about test cricket is there's more gaps generally. So if you do hit solid shots and you do hit through the cricket ball, then you get to pick up runs very quickly. And the interesting thing is by the time that they started to put the fielders out, he was then clearing them. So, yeah. You know, which was fantastic viewing.
Yeah, I think as well, a player like that is very much based on confidence. And once he hits a couple in the middle of the bat, almost, you know, when he was, say, 40 not out off of 20 balls, India are already picking it up from the fence because there's no stopping him then.
And the other side of that coin, of course, is the Indians, who are having a pretty torrid time in Australia at the moment. And that made me think, what with all the evidence-based coaching and the statistical-based coaching that's going into IPL these days, is it a case that things aren't being done quite as well at the top end of Indian cricket as they are in IPL franchises when there's a lot of money on the line?
I would wholeheartedly disagree with that. And the couple of reasons why is that obviously I'm going to sit there and defend my old boss, my mate Duncan Fletcher, because he's a very, very thorough man. But also, actually, that the chap that does the analysis for the Indian team, DJ, is actually with the Mumbai Indians, who go into that detail, probably as much as anybody does in the IPL. And actually, he's part of the company that sits behind most of the IPL analysis systems within all of the IPL franchises. So they're working with the Indian team, and they have been working with the Indian team for a long time. So actually the correlation between the information that IPL sides and the Indian side get are very, very similar. So it won't be through lack of information. It won't be through lack of analysis. Australia is a very difficult place to go and tour. I think the Australian fast bowling group that they've got together now is looking very, very promising indeed. And that will provide a real good challenge for England when they play against them back-to-back over the, in a couple of years' time.
Well, they just need the edge that pitch vision gives them, don't they, Berners?
Absolutely. It would definitely hone their bowlers in to have a bit of a more stringent plan against certainly the likes of Warner. If, as Mark said, often the analyst has a lot of knowledge about players' key kind of striking zones. And if they know that Warner likes in a particular area, I'd be advising them to get on it. But I have been speaking to Eric Simons, who's actually their bowling coach and going to be heading up the coaching at Delhi Daredevils as the as the IPL starts. So he's fully aware of what we can do. So watch this space, and we might see a revolt in the Indian bowling attack very shortly.
I guess it's a case of saying, you know, you can't have too much information, can you? You know, as long as you know how to handle that information and analyse it, you can never have too much, can you?
Absolutely.
That's absolutely right. But that's where the skill of the coach comes into play, and the skill of the delivery of what's going across. And ultimately, that is coaching, because, you know, we're hopeful, obviously, at Pitch Vision that everybody will have our systems in time, but not everybody will use them in exactly the right way. And the skill of the coach is to be able to take the important bits out and incorporate that into an integrated coaching program for somebody. And that's a real skill. And there's a number of coaches that can do it, and a number of coaches that are aspiring to do that.
Yeah, and that's one of the key messages, I think, that we bring across in all parts of Pitch Vision Academy, is that you're never going to be able to replace the coach. You can only enhance with getting more information, and then that the art, that's the science of coaching, and then the art of coaching is getting that information and getting across to the players that the key messages that you want to get across to them.
Yeah, absolutely. The science supports the art of the coach. That is absolutely spot on. I completely agree with that.
Time for the interview section on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and every week we talk to people who are involved in playing and coaching cricket all over the world. And this week I'm very pleased to be joined by somebody who has got a foot in two very different worlds of playing and coaching cricket, and that's Shuradit Lahari, who is a player who has played in India at a high level of club cricket and also in England, club cricket in England as well. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, cheers.
So you've got a unique, you've seen cricket played in the UK and you've seen cricket played in India. What would you say the main differences are, especially when it comes to coaching young players?
What I can say from my experience playing cricket and also doing a bit of coaching in England and also in India is like, I think the coaching system is a bit different from India. The coaching system is more on the technical side in England rather than from India. In England, I can say, suppose a guy of 12 and 13 is, the coaches give them a bit more technical aspects rather than from saying, the mental thing. It's more in a technical sense rather than from a mental sense. But in India, I can see coaches, as I can give you an experience of myself, who has been coached at the age of 12 and 13, is more like mental rather than from technical things. Because I think in England, it's like a coach is like a level one or level two coach, done coach in any levels of cricket, if it's juniors or seniors. But in India, the junior level of coaching is not based on level one, level two, or level three coaches. It's more like people who are experienced in playing cricket are coaching kids.
And which way would you say you prefer? Do you prefer a more tactical and mental approach to the game, or do you prefer to see more technical, or would you like to see a combination of both?
I personally believe it's like a guy who wants to be a professional cricketer needs the technical aspect of the game and also the mental aspect of the game. If you can combine both, that's the best thing you can get.
And what about your playing experience? How does playing in India differ from playing in England?
Like the playing conditions in India is totally different to that of England. So suppose if you're playing in India, you play under hot conditions rather than from the cooler conditions where the ball swings a lot and seams a lot. But in England, you get the ball moving around a lot. The wickets are totally different from India. Indian wickets are more flat. Ball comes under the ball very well. You can hit through the line. But in wickets in England, it's more like sluggish, mm-hmm. slow, and where the ball moves a lot. it's a huge difference. Yeah, sorry.
So do you find that that is a challenge if you're sort of used to playing on subcontinental Indian wickets and then you come to the UK because it's a different set of conditions, you find that more of a challenge?
Yeah, I mean, I've played cricket in England and I've faced a challenge playing in India. It's like the wickets are more hard, so where the bowler doesn't get anything. So it's better off playing for a batsman in India rather than playing as a bowler.
Yeah.
But you can get loads of wickets playing in England with the conditions favourable for yourself.
And what about your plans for the future? Are you playing and coaching cricket at the moment in India?
Yeah, I'm playing cricket at the moment. I'm playing a Division 1 league games in my hometown, Kolkata. And I'm coaching a bit of kids, the school kids. But, yeah, let's see if everything goes well. If everything goes well and I can touch wood, everything goes well and I can play the best level I want to, the highest level of cricket in India. And also, yeah, I would love to come into coaching. Probably if I leave cricket, I would go in coaching with the kids.
Well, it's a unique insight you've given us, especially as the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. You know, we have a lot of people who are in India. They work for our company, Pitch Vision Company, making the Pitch Vision products. And we often have people out in India, and it's good to get an international perspective and understand how things are different in different countries. So
yeah.
It's great that you have first-hand experience of that. So thanks for coming on the show to tell us more about it.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, mate. Cheers.
Good to talk to you. time now for the questions section on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. And as you already know, if you send in your question and it's chosen as the best question of the week, then you win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can find out all about those coaching course videos and worksheets and tools that you can use to improve your cricket at pitchvision.com/academy. So Bernard has picked out a couple of questions this week for us to mull over. What's the first one you've got there, Bernard?
First one comes in from Sidhanth, a club cricketer in India, and he's picked up on the fact that a lot of people these days bring sports psychology and also visualisation into the game. And he was just wondering, what is the role that visualisation or imagery that players can have in cricketers' performance, and how far does it help a player to perform on the field, and how is this practiced on a regular basis?
Well, visualization, to me anyway, is one of those things that has got a little bit of a bad reputation, being sort of lumped into sports psychology and you know, imagining that you're sitting on a leather sofa somewhere telling a psychiatrist about your childhood. But really, it's something that we all do anyway. We all think about good innings that we played or bad bowling spells that we've had. And that's if it's not actually happening in front of you right then it that's what visualization is. So all you're doing by being aware that you visualize is that you're making sure that you use that what you already do to remind yourself of the good things that you've done and put the bad things out of your mind, because a lot of people, especially if you haven't got a lot of confidence in yourself, a lot of people naturally focus on the negative side of things and think about that the bad shot they played last week to get out, when really all you need to do is start thinking about some of the good things that you've done in the past to remind yourself that you have succeeded, and that's going to help you succeed in the future. So it's an absolutely vital part of cricket. You do it whether you realize you do it or not. So if you're going to do it, then why not do it in a way that's going to benefit you?
Yeah, visualization, I mean, from a level four coaching perspective, when we went into it, I thought I understood visualization and what it was used for. But actually, Steve Bull is a magnificent sports psychologist that applies things into the cricket environment, sport environment, working environments of all the people he works with very well. Called it basically a confidence tool. And what it would enable somebody to do is to reconnect with a performance in the past where they've done really well. And the more you can associate into your visualization by, and what I mean by that is to get yourself right into that moment, so you can smell the grass almost, you can hear the sounds, you can capture the feelings that you had and the movement patterns as well that you had when you were successful. The more likely that confidence is going to come back, fill that confidence bank of yours, and you'll be able to repeat that kind of performance again the next time you go out and play. And a lot of top-class performers at the international level take time out in the evening before they go to sleep or before they go to bed to do exactly that. And having fortunately worked alongside people like Graham Smith and Kevin Peterson and Ricky Ponting, that's a thing that they do just before they go to sleep most nights, certainly before games, before test matches. It's just to run through everything so they've got that really clear image of them being successful, taking it into that match. So it's massively important, but I would say get into an associated state. Have a look on the internet about associated states, and it's however connected and as close that you can get to that performance that you had where you hit your straps or you took a great catch or you bowled at your quickest or you scored the best innings that you've ever done, and that will confidently, or that will boost your confidence bank to take into the next game. So it's a huge thing, but it needs to be practiced. It's something that doesn't just happen, and people generally have a go at it for a little bit and then forget about it. But as I say, the best performers in the world are the ones that do it on a regular basis, 3-4 times a week before they go into competition.
Yeah, and when you're first starting to do it, there's absolutely no harm in doing it every single day. One thing that I've found works for some people, I mean, different people have different ways of doing things, but one thing I've found that works for some people is if you get them to write down their their thoughts on a particularly successful performance, batting, bowling, fielding, whatever it is, in as much detail as they can write it down in. And then every day for a couple of weeks, just spend time going over what you've written down and trying to remember, as you say, Gareth, in as much detail as you possibly can, until you're getting into the habit of learning how to do that. And then that it starts to become much more natural then. And then you can back off and, you know, do it less, you know, maybe just before a big game or whatever. But start by doing it every day until you get into the habit of remembering successful stuff. Because naturally, I think not many people naturally do that. They naturally,
right, exactly right.
Yeah, they naturally exactly right. Think the other way. They actually remember, oh God, I played a terrible shot last week. I hope I don't do that again. That's still visualising, but it's
yeah,
sabotaging yourself.
Negative yeah. visualisation.
Exactly.
And you're absolutely right there, David. There's another thing that I learned recently on the neuro-linguistic programming course, which is something that people might want to have a look at on the internet and get a bit of an understanding of, because it's an intriguing area, is acting as if. And the way where they describe that is you can either act as if you're a high performer and take on some of those thought patterns that Ricky Ponting would have, or movement patterns that somebody would have, by pretending you're somebody else. Or if you haven't had success at a particular ground, for example, and there's a lot of players that, you know, will turn up at a ground and go, oh, I've never scored runs here before, yet they've scored, you know, 500 runs already in the season and I'm feeling very confident, that you can take your performance from another ground and visualise the ground that you haven't been successful on, and basically cut and paste that performance into that ground in your head. So then the next time you turn up at that ground that you haven't been successful at, you've actually got an imprint in your mind that you can be successful at it, because you can see it inside your mind. So acting as if, it's an NLP term, an NLP technique, and it's something that I've incorporated into some visualisation with some players that I've worked with recently.
Not sure my memory is going to be quite good enough for a lot of this stuff, but I'll give that a go.
Yeah, give it a go.
But I think it's important to say that you can't just give it a go and go, oh, well, I tried it a couple of times, didn't work. You have to really buy into
it.
Yeah, exactly. You have to really, really buy into it and remind yourself that if you don't work at it, there's a chance that you're sabotaging things and you're thinking negatively by default.
Yeah, I mean, it's like anything else, isn't it? It's a system. You know, visualization in your brain and the way that works, it's a system, and we have to work at it in the same way as we'll be working at our front arms when we bowl, or we'll be working our squat in the gym or on a running machine. It's, you know, you have to practice, and good practice and deliberate practice makes perfect. We know that from all of the research and the books and everything that's out there, and you have to do the same thing when you apply that to your brain and visualization.
Okay, our next question is from a 16-year-old fast bowler from India who's got a few height issues. He's saying he's 5'7", and he doesn't get much bounce due to naturally him having a bit of a skiddy action. So he's not very effective on slower tracks. He's a bit of an ankle bopper. What's our advice to him, guys?
I wrote an article about this recently, actually, that can be found on the site in the coach education element. It's about what to do on flat tracks. And obviously, this lad here is 5'7", and you know, isn't going to be coming down from the heights of Kirtley Ambrose and those guys that could use their height effectively on those pitches. So what can you do? And one of the things that's really important, I think, when you get on a really flat wicket, and it'll be interesting for the seamers to see what happens in Abu Dhabi as the wicket gets a bit harder over the course of the next couple of days. Obviously, the spinners have dug into the pitch today and got something out of it. But as it flattens out, which it inevitably does in Abu Dhabi, then the seamers are going to have to work out some strategies for themselves. And one of them will undoubtedly be varying the pace subtly over a range, instead of just bowling loads of slower balls, and, you know, which is the conventional club method of doing it. And England did it in 2007 out in Sri Lanka on some really flat wickets out there, and actually copied the Sri Lankan bowling attack. So instead of just bowling your top pace ball and then chucking in slower balls, they were actually working through a range of about 6 or 7 kilometres per hour, which meant that the ball was always arriving at the batter at slightly different times. and it was it would affect the batter's timing. So that's something that I'd encourage a lad to do. But in order to do it, you need to be able to operate from length. So a 5'7" bowler who can accurately hit length 6 to 8 metres away from the middle stump of the batter, 65% of the time, and vary their pace through a small range, and have the ability to really ram a top pace ball in at the end of an over, for example, to try and get an LB, will have an advantage over what he's presently doing.
Yes, sir. It really is a question of saying to yourself, okay, so I don't have the height advantage. I'm not going to get the bounce most of the time. Maybe if I get a really quick track, then I'll have some bounce. But most of the time, it's not going to happen. I'll use other weapons in my armoury. I'll get it to move off the seam. I'll get it to swing. I'll vary the pace, as you say, Gareth. I'll have a Yorker.
Absolutely. You've got to have other tools. You can't always rely on the ball seaming around. So you've got to have other things. And in that article, I talked about making sure you keep the ball in good nick, and that's a team thing. Or it might be one shiner. And I talked about Marcus Trzaskowski in that article and how important he was to the England team in 2005, because him and his mints got the ball into good nick and kept it in good nick. And that's essential, because if you can get the ball to move laterally through the air, even if there's no seam movement, it gives you half a chance. And those bowlers in 2005 exploited that really, really well.
It's what makes seam bowling much more of an art and a skill. Like, you know, you haven't got the physical traits to hair in and knock someone's head off, and you know you might not be able to bowl at 90 miles an hour. But that makes it a challenge of how skillful can you be and how well can you use the resources you have available to you. So you know it becomes a lot more cerebral, which of course fast bowling is not famous for. So yeah, you have to use your brain a little bit more, which we always like on Fitch Vision Academy Cricket Show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you listen to an Andy Flower interview, and inevitably he'll talk about skill, and it's about developing skill. So in this last 5 days since they lost the previous Test match, you know, whereas the newspapers will probably go on, commitment or concentration or whatever the case may be, or you know, you've got to look to try and get over the 3 or 4 different balls that Ajmal can bowl. Andy talks about skill a lot, and this is a skill thing that the bowler's talking to us about here. He's limited, he's got a slightly lower position to release the ball because of his height. You know, he plays on some flat wickets, so you've got to develop those skills. And as you say, David, the Yorkers, shining a ball is a skill, keeping the ball in good nick is a skill. Being able to vary your pace over a range, or you know, be able to bowl, go wide of a crease, or come around the wicket and bring the slips into play for a right-handed batter through creating that angle, are very important skills to develop.
It also harks back to the previous question a little bit, in that the way that the question was asked was focusing on that one thing that is negative. When what he could be focusing on is all the things that he potentially could be doing, and maybe has already got those skills of being able to swing the ball away or cut it back in, or you know, adjust his position on the cricket. All those things he might already be able to do. So you know, it's an interest from a psychological point of view. It's interesting to see the way that question was worded, and maybe he needs a little bit more confidence in himself.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Identify what you do well. Identify the areas that you've got opportunity to develop in, and then every time you achieve something, just drop that into your confidence bank. So you know, you're always making those deposits in. And when you need it, when you get onto a wicket that is skiddy and doesn't do much, then you've got those things to come back to. And something that all of the greats talk about is preparation. You know, because it's easy to say, oh, I'm confident, but actually, how confident is your, or how robust is your confidence? And that comes from hard work and working at those skills. And if you know that they're in place, then that equals confidence.
And that brings us to the end of this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and we have to decide a winner before we go of our competition, because we always give away an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Gareth, we had Siddhanth and Jairu talking about psychology and talking about being a short, fast bowler. Which one did you prefer?
I like both, as I always do. I think we get some great questions on the show. But Siddhanth's one about sports psychology, and it's not something that we've answered particularly over the last few weeks. So just for the fact that it's a new area, and hopefully we gave some people some good ideas of where they can go and do a little bit more research and apply some of the techniques of their own games, I'm going to go with Siddhanth this week.
Yeah, always great to have questions coming in from India. We love our Indian listeners, so please keep sending in your questions. And Berners, how would somebody send in a question if they wanted to have theirs read out and answered and win a prize?
They can email us on this address. It's coach@pitchvision.com. Or they could give us a call, 020-88-167-691.
If you're one of those newfangled people who use Twitter, then you can catch us at PV Cricket Coach. And if you're one of those less newfangled people who use Facebook, then you can find us by searching for Pitch Vision Academy. You can also subscribe to the show in iTunes by searching for Pitch Vision Academy within iTunes. And if you don't use iTunes, then you can listen to the show on any device that you like by going to pitchvision.com, searching for the podcasts, and there's a link to the feed in every single article of the 146 so far that we've done. So there's plenty for you to catch up on if this is the first one that you're listening to. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, coach.
Cheers, coach.